same problem she had.
Picking on you, Facebook.
What kind of problem do I have?
She's age got something too.
Say no.
No problems here. See?
Not anymore.
Huh?
Not anymore.
Not anymore?
Uh-uh.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Not anymore.
It's public, anybody.
Sean Robin.
We are.
Good afternoon, we're here this afternoon for a one workshop, as you're well aware of. And thank Mr. Sammons for coming down and just bringing his expertise with him. To continue our study and our education on special taxation districts. But a couple others that should be in here in a few minutes, but we'll go ahead and start without them. We will try to move through this thing as quick as possible, and at the end, depending on how late it is, we'll probably give a few minutes if you have questions or comments, if you keep them brief, and we'll give you an opportunity at the end. Who's conducting the workshop? Mr. Sammons?
Sure, yeah. I did want to mention that we've kind of broken this up into three different sections, so to speak. First, this first section is about special development tax districts, and Mr. Sammons is here to mainly discuss that. And then we wanted to also talk about impact type fees. And Mr. Guthrie will help with the special districts and also explain regarding that. And then transportation districts, which is Mr. Ted Bishop from DelDOT is here to help explain regarding that topic. So we tried to go over at least a number of different ideas to fund infrastructure. And with that, I'll introduce Mr. Hal Sammons, who is the county's bond attorney or bond counsel with Potter Anderson and Kroon.
Mr. Baker, if we could, I would ask the council to keep your questions or comments until Mr. Sammons gets done, and then we will go through the round and see if you've got questions or comments for him. And the same thing for the second presenter and the third one, to keep us some kind of an order to the meeting so we're not all speaking out of turn and try to keep it in together. Mr. Sammons?
Thanks, Mr. Dukes. Hi, I'm Hal Sammons from Potter Anderson and Kroon. We serve as the county's bond counsel and have done so for years. At the request of David and of Susie, I've come down today to help you all through a workshop to talk a little bit about special development district financings. Pretty hot topic in the state, as you all know. We prepared a 3 or 4 page outline, and for anybody out here, there should be some on the back of the table if you haven't gotten one. And I think what I'm going to try to do today is to kind of walk through why we're talking about this right now, what they are, if the county were interested, what the county would need to do to go about getting the power to do this, and then perhaps answer some of your questions. By way of disclosure, I serve as the county's bond counsel, as has my firm, but in the two special tax district deals that have been done, the two special development district deals that have done, I served as an underwriter's counsel representing the underwriter of the bonds in those deals. There are some people here, John Stafford from Miles and Stockbridge, who served as a bond counsel and as a developer counsel in those deals, and they're the only two deals that have been done in the state of Delaware to date using this authority. So aside from myself, should you have questions about structured, I'm sure John could help answer some of them, but I'm here today at the request of the county, and I'm here representing the county, so I don't have a particular interest in this other than to help you work through this process. And ultimately, my representations and loyalties would lie to you in this process, your questions and my responses. Looking at this outline, what we can see here is the first topic is special development districts and tax increment financing districts, SDDs and TIFs, if you will. Why are we talking about this? Well, several years ago, the General Assembly enacted two pieces of legislation that is existing and on the books today. Title 22, Chapter 17, the Tax Increment Financing Act, and Title 22, Chapter 18, the Special Development District Act. Now, interestingly enough, it gave the power to a municipality to do these types of deals. And I put there the definition that the General Assembly used for municipality about 10 years ago. And as you can see, it only pertains to municipalities with populations in excess of 50,000 people. In other words, this was legislation to give the city of Wilmington the power to do these deals. City didn't take advantage of this for that project. These were on the books. These financing techniques have been used in over 48 or 49 other states as effective methods to basically finance public infrastructure required by specific growth. Some out-of-state folks who had in-state development saw this legislation and, working with local towns, had certain town charters amended to give those towns the specific power to use the powers enumerated in these two existing statutes to do these deals. Mainly, I'm sure you've all heard of them, the town of Bridgeville, Plantation Lakes, and then I think the town of Millsboro with Heritage Shores.
Well, did I get that backwards?
I got that backwards. But in any event, there are the two special development district bond deals that have been done in the state. And again, there were simple town charter amendments that gave them the power to use this legislation to do that. Since that time, there have been several towns in the, particularly Sussex County, who have had their charters or are in the process of having their charters amended to give them the statutory authority and power to do this, to finance infrastructure. If you jump ahead a little bit, down in this in paragraph D below, you can see the city of Milford, the town of Georgetown, the city of Seaford, the town of Laurel, and the town of Millville all have either had legislation adopted giving them this power or have pending legislation at the end of their General Assembly's most recent legislative session, bills that would give them the power to do this work. Flipping back to the first page, Newcastle County was approached about a potential project in Newcastle County. And like Sussex County, Newcastle County does not currently have the power to do this. So a bill was introduced and went through the legislative process. It passed the House. And what I've put out in subparagraph B1 on the first page is the House Committee Report excerpt explaining, which is now the synopsis to that bill, what this legislation would do. And this is a really pretty good synopsis of what special development district legislation would do. And if you take a moment and read it, it will kind of set the stage for what we're talking about. You can see it says it enables Newcastle County to take advantage of the opportunity to have redevelopment infrastructure impact costs financed through the use of tax increment financing in special development districts. It can be used effectively to encourage redevelopment by steering growth to desired areas. They obtain funding through the issuance of bonds, which are not backed by the full faith and credit of Newcastle County or the governmental entity. The payment for these bonds comes from an increase in real estate tax imposed only in the project area. Thus, those directly benefiting from the growth and development bear the burden of paying for it, and other real estate taxpayers are unaffected. They're implemented through agreements between Newcastle County, or in this case, if the county were to do it, Sussex County, and the developers, or the owners, desiring to utilize this funding mechanism. The nature of the redevelopment infrastructure is subject to the approval of the county. Impact associated with redevelopment, which would not be covered by typical land use approval, can be incorporated into this. And this goes on to indicate that TIFs and SDDs are utilized in 48 states, and it also makes reference to those two existing statutory provisions on the Delaware Code today that gives the power to the city of Wilmington and now to a couple other towns by specific amendments. This bill actually sent through the House, was adopted, as you probably all know, and it went to the Senate. There was some debate, and there was an amendment produced or prepared, which is where it now stands. And you can see the amendment. I just did an excerpt of the amendment on this piece of paper. It talks about a clarification that a particular senator wanted to make it clear that they're non-recourse to the county and that they're non-recourse beyond the special tax to the individual underlying property owner in the district. So the legislature has basically pronounced already and adopted these two acts. There are several towns that now have this power. Newcastle County has pending a bill that would give it the power. And the topic that we're now talking about is how these work and whether Sussex County would entertain a proposal to give it the power to do a similar type of financing. Moving further down in this outline, you can see I've just made reference to the town of Bridgeville and the town of Millsboro, two deals I had mentioned before. To my knowledge, these are the only two bond deals utilizing this statutory authority that have been done in the state. If anybody's interested, there are lots of documents about that, including a document I have to admit I drafted primarily with a lot of help, but it's the offering document pursuant to which these bonds were sold. It's a big, thick book, and it describes all of this and describes those projects and gives a lot of information. I provided for David and for Susan a book of this size with a lot of this information in it, and if anybody wants it on the council, we can make it available. The offering documents, various pieces of legislation. I've told David and Susie there will be a test later, so if you take it, you'll get the test. But in any event, there's a lot more backup information if you want to read about it. Just contact me, I'll give you all of that. That takes us down to the special development districts under existing legislation. Previously, I understand that some folks came before you with a request to get authority to move forward adopting a piece of legislation that would give the county this power and would likewise had a piece of legislation that they had along with them at that time. We're not looking at that piece of legislation for purposes of this discussion. This paragraph 2 is just a brief discussion of how these things work based on the existing statute that's on the state books that the municipalities have currently been using to allow themselves this power. So what's a special development district? By definition, it's what it is. It's a defined geographic area. Two-thirds, under existing state statute, two-thirds of the property owners within a defined geographic area, if the county had this power, would have to come to you and ask you to create this as a district. By resolution, by an act of the council, you would then have to move forward and agree to do that. You wouldn't be obligated to do so. In connection with that, the purpose of that is to basically issue special obligation bonds for the purposes of financing infrastructure that's required as a result of the development in that district. Special obligation bonds. That's not the full faith and credit or taxing power of the county, unlike the GO bonds. These are special revenues, which is basically an incremental special tax assessed against each of these properties, which is pledged to that debt service. The county would not be responsible, if there were a default, to raise its taxes like it would otherwise be responsible for its general obligation bonds. The special geographic area can't be just anywhere. The proposed development by state statute would have to be consistent with the state comprehensive plan.
The state plan or the county plan?
Well, it's the county plan as required by the state statute as it all kind of flows up. As this was enacted, the state was simply putting some checks and balances in there to make sure that this was consistent with that planning process. So it really is the county plan, but there's that state planning regime that requires it be submitted. A special tax. There's a special tax that would be assessed against each and every property in the district to pay for the debt service on the bonds that are issued for that development and other qualifying costs of running that district. And I thought it might be interesting as kind of an afterthought, if you flip to the very last page, I excerpted a chart from the offering document in the Plantation Lakes transaction. I apologize, it didn't come out on one page. That Keenan Rice from UNICAP, which is the administrator for that district, and Keenan may be here, put together for us in that offering. But as you look at this, this kind of shows the relative tax burdens of a variety of different locales and jurisdictions in our area, which in this particular case, the people selling the bonds felt was the market for the people who would come in and buy these houses. And they took a hypothetical $325,000 single-family home, and then they ran that through the internet reporting of all the various tax burdens in the various places. And if you go down through this, you'll see at the very bottom are the total tax burdens by each taxpayer in each of these areas. And in this, you can see there's a special tax on the top of the second page of $1,000. So in the Plantation Lakes,
you're a new tax guy.
In 2007, in Plantation Lakes, you can see that the special tax was assessed at $1,000, and paying that $1,000, you can see the total tax burden for somebody in the town of Millsboro in 2007 is projected to be $3,472 as compared to these other counties. I just give this to you by way of example of how this worked in that deal, to put it in perspective. the reason these deals can work and why they're somewhat attractive in our state is we have such a low tax rate. And in neighboring areas, particularly for a lot of this housing, people are accustomed to much higher tax rates.
So the bottom line is this is transferring the tax burden from the general population to simply those who fall within these special tax districts.
For these particular improvements, yes it is.
Just an additional
burden. It's an additional tax burden.
Exactly. That, yeah, they're not shifting anything, we're just creating new.
That's exactly right.
For the benefit of Mr. Phillips and Mr. Rogers, who came in after we got started, I...
No questions.
Maybe now. Yeah, there will be questions.
I'm okay with questions.
But we got three presenters this afternoon, and so Mr. Samus gets done. I will give everybody an opportunity to ask him questions.
Exactly.
And the same thing with the second and third, so we can sort of keep this thing moving.
Yeah, and David knows me, and Susie knows me pretty well now, and I asked them for a time limit, and I just talk all afternoon, so I'm trying to keep it brief to keep...
Yeah, but you guys up, so...
Moving through the special development district, the special tax, this is a special tax on those properties only. Paragraph D on the bottom of page 2, under the current existing legislation, this is the list of things that the state statute allows these bond proceeds to be used for. It's a long list of infrastructure, as you can see. The important thing to note here is if the county were to get this power and to enable itself to do these types of bonds, the county's in no way obligated to issue bonds for any of these districts. It doesn't have to create a district, and it's free to set whatever parameters around this that it wants to. It's free to pick and choose from around this list of the types of things that, for whatever reasons, the county council would decide it wanted to finance. So for purposes of the enabling legislation, the state would simply give you the power to do these deals. It would be incumbent on the county then as a group to get together to decide how you want to implement them. So you can look at this list by way of representation, but it would again be incumbent on you to decide what you wanted to do. An important question has come up in connection with this, and this is covered in subparagraph E here, is this can be used for infrastructure both inside and outside of the district. But there are constitutional limits on this. You simply can't tax somebody for any reason, particularly a special tax. There has to be a nexus between what you're taxing them for and the benefit that they're getting out of it. So, for instance, if DelDOT were to require a huge infrastructure improvement in a huge intersection on the other side of the county, you couldn't be free to use these bonds to assess in a special district, totally separate and aside from that infrastructure improvement, the cost of that improvement. There has to be a direct nexus and benefit resulting from the tax, and it has to tie into the development and has to be a result of the development. So for purposes of financing things outside of the district, there's an analysis that must be done and a proportionate share or concept that must be come up with based on the use, who else might benefit, who else is paying for it, what's required. And there's not an exact science there. There's not an exact formula. But I just want to make it clear that if DelDOT's requiring something in the eastern part of Sussex County and there's a development district in the western part and there's absolutely no traffic impact from the district in the western part with the changes required in the eastern part, you can't use this as a special tax to help finance that. One of the other things that's typically questioned in this kind of a context is, what does this mean to the county and how do you administer this? Well, essentially, what you all would be asked to do is entertain some legislation and some negotiations with the owners of the land and the developer, and in doing that, you would set the parameters from your deal, you would create a district, and you would agree to issue bonds. We'll talk about that in a second. But going forward, the county currently doesn't have all that in place. You're not in the business of creating special tax levies, and we've got enough to do. What typically occurs is the county would hire an administrator. In the two prior deals in Delaware, a company called Unicap played that role. There are other administrators out there. And it's a professional company whose job it is to help administer these types of districts. They assist the issuer, in this case the county, with the special tax assessment and levy, with help calculating the tax, with coming up with the tax analysis to support the special tax up front, with helping to get the special tax into the county bills, and collecting and helping get delinquent taxes. These taxes are a special tax, but they're treated like any other county tax. It's an ad valorem property tax. It rates the same level as your taxes do for your general operating purposes. So when you assess these taxes, they automatically become a lien on the property if unpaid, pursuant to the state statutes. And the one of the major differences for the county would be is if you were to do one of these deals, the county would have to agree to go out and collect delinquent taxes. currently your tax rate as compared to the school districts and some of the towns is relatively low, and you may allow a period for people to be delinquent on their property taxes. The only source payment for these kinds of bonds comes from these ad valorem property special taxes. So you'll have to promise to the bondholders that if there are ad valorem property delinquent special taxes, after some period of time, you have to cause your attorneys to take action to go collect the taxes. That's a little different. And that's something that would be a little different from the county's perspective because, for instance, the county may have a program whereby it doesn't actively go foreclose on properties if it's going to cause somebody to be dispossessed of their own. In this particular case, you'd have to do that simply because this is the sole source of payment for the bonds. The next topic is tax increment financing. It's related here simply because the state statutes that exist on the book provide for tax increment financing or TIF financing. I'll only touch on it briefly, and it's related to special development district in that it takes a special tax and uses that tax to pay for the development on the project, but it's slightly different in that what it does is it looks at the undeveloped value, assessed value of property, and then the developed assessed value of property, and it uses that incremental difference as a pledge and a payment source for bonds. This is a very good tool for blighted areas where you've got urban blighted areas and a developer wants to come in and it wants to finance a lot of infrastructure improvements. And you basically get those improvements and the increased value from the property from those improvements to pay for them. The steps necessary to obtain the power to create a special development district. Should the county desire to do this, you would need enabling legislation. The county currently, under its existing statutory power, doesn't have the power to do this. This first bill we talked about up on the 1B in Newcastle County is Newcastle County's attempt this past year to get that approval. Basically, you would need to go to the General Assembly and get that statutory power. As we all know, at the end of the last legislative session, in connection with the discussion and debate about TDRs and the transfer development rights, the state administration had proposed a bill, 244, that coupled special development districts with TDRs that got reported out but didn't go anywhere, and that's still out there. So there's a lot of other issues at play other than giving the county the power, but you would need to go and get a piece of legislation giving you the power to do this. If you got the power based on the existing statutory framework, in order to create a district, two-thirds of the property owners within the district would have to come to you and say, we want a district. Typically, it's the developer who's developing the project because they own all the land. But it could be property owners. At that point in time, council, through resolution under the existing legislation, if adopted in the same format for the county, would agree to do it or not agree to do it. And in connection with that, the county council and the county would be free to describe, discuss, and otherwise agree to the types of projects that would be financed or not financed and the parameters of the deal, the amount of the debt, and any other things. In the existing two transactions, and if you're interested, I would encourage you to read these offering documents, those particular towns actually exacted in this negotiation process certain projects or benefits for those towns from those bond proceeds and otherwise in connection with agreeing to serve in this capacity and issue this special debt. So once you've agreed to the parameters, the next step is you have to adopt an ordinance through the normal ordinance process, which would approve the issuance of a certain amount of bonds for that project. You would be working closely on all of this with most probably the administrator, a special company that you would hire in connection with coming in to help look at the transaction, look at the debt, look at the projects, and come up with the underlying taxing structure. There's a tax report and a special rate and method of taxation that's all developed as part of this, which basically would be adopted by you as part of your ordinance process, by which you would say, every year during the life of these bonds we're approving here, we agree to issue an amount of debt necessary to pay the principal and interest on these bonds, plus some administrative expenses of running the district. This should not be an additional financial burden on the county. It should be self-financed through these projects. That's how the statute works. And then there needs to be a market for the special obligation bonds. And I don't want to take a whole lot more time, but it's important to realize that even if you have the power to create these things, there has to be somebody who's willing to buy these things. These aren't full faith and credit with the county. County isn't guaranteeing these. If these things go up, the county's only obligation is to assess the special tax every year and agree to collect the special tax every year. The underwriters, there was a group of underwriters, professional bond underwriters, like securities underwriters. In particular, there were several who specialize in marketing these kind of bonds. They typically would come in the inception of a project, working with the developer and the county to determine whether or not the particular project can be financed, whether it's feasible. Generally speaking, there has to be a certain size of a district to make it financially and economically feasible to do. Generally speaking, I think you need to have a larger planned unit development as opposed to a district consisting of a larger group of smaller developers who aren't necessarily working in concert. But that's all stuff that, you know, needs to be worked out in a specific instance. But I wanted to point out that just because you have this power and just because people want to use it doesn't mean it's going to be an instant source of credit. There has to be the ability to sell these bonds. However, there are people who buy these bonds, and there are underwriters who specialize in selling these bonds. And so part of the group that would come together to do one of these deals would include an underwriter who could assess that in up front, allow you to know whether or not in a particular project, this developer with your particular special development district was a feasible undertaking. The final thing I'd put on here I'd shown you earlier was this comparative tax analysis, just showing what was pulled together in connection with the last transaction of different tax rates, the special obligation tax of $1,000 in Plantation Lakes, which incrementally will go up over the course of the deal. From a homeowner's perspective in a special development district, what are you really doing? You're buying a piece of property, you have ad valorem property taxes to pay, you have county school taxes to pay, you have capitation tax to pay. You also, in addition, for a period of time, are buying into an obligation to pay a special tax that's set up front and that incrementally by 1% or 2% will go up each year for your property. Your obligation is limited to that special tax on your property. In essence, you take the overall infrastructure costs that are being financed and rack it up among all the different properties in a district when a bond issue is issued, and you allocate those costs, and each property is assuming a portion of those costs. So over the course of the life of a 15 or 20 year deal, you're paying property taxes every year in a special amount of $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, depending on what it is, over and above the additional taxes and traditional taxes you otherwise pay. When you, as a homeowner, buy a property in one of these things, there is a deed restriction that's put in place to advise you of that. From my experience in the state with these two districts, one of the things I would be telling the county to do is do a much better deal up front with the developer to advise the potential homeowner about this. Perhaps different disclosure language, bigger disclosure language, because the biggest headache for you down the road will be a taxpayer who comes forward and asking why they're paying this special tax, because they didn't realize they were getting it. Despite the fact that it's all built in there now, somebody never quite gets the word. But in any event, that's what you're buying into, an additional special obligation to pay a tax every year. And from a planning perspective, this is oftentimes used because it, in essence, transfers to the people who are causing the development costs the cost of paying the debt incurred to finance those development costs. And then I'll stop it there and take any questions, and didn't want to take any more of your time and allow you to ask questions and consider this.
Mr. Cole.
Mr. Sam, it's just some observations. First of all, I'm looking at, you know, the first page here and about the bills and everything. It talks about redevelopment. And we had Mr. Baker and a current, a previous county administrator, who we won't name right now, go out and do a little homework for us when we were looking at these once before. And they came back and reported that we should not venture into them. It wasn't a recommendation because it was being used in many of these other jurisdictions for redevelopment, like it's been stated in here, brownfields and things like that, and things like that. So, and then I also read in here, just another observation, just the word municipality keeps popping out because it's easy for a municipality to understand the impacts because it's a defined, small defined area in a new subdivision, and Ocean View is a good example where Bear Trap came in and they thought just because of all these transfer taxes they'd be fine. They look up in a couple of years, they run out of money. Well, the county's problem is it's so large, and we've got problems that are much bigger than just in a little defined area of a town. We've got a cumulative effect of all this development, and right now I see developers doing fine here. They come in, they brag about how easy it is to develop here in Sussex County. We don't have the red tape and the regulations they have elsewhere. So they flock here, and they had flocked here, now it's just the marketplace has slowed them up. But I don't see how this really is going to help on the county level, again, because of our size. So I think that was one thing that I kind of picked up out of this. And I think it is a good tool for towns, municipalities, cities.
That's
where I've ever found it. It's in a municipality.
It's an important point. The existing legislation talks about municipalities and municipalities only. The legislation that you all would need if you decided to go through.
Well, I understand. What I'm saying is my educating on this subject here in the last couple of years has been it's always municipalities. Counties have kind of shied away from it. They found it cumbersome. It sounds awful complicated. Also, county government people like ourselves don't really want to raise taxes. And this is raising taxes. For some people, yes. But and I have a question about how far we can go off-site to tax this guy for these improvements way out here. Who's going to determine that? And right now, we see the developers negotiating with DelDOT, and they're making some headway there. And that's, I mean, in other words, I don't see why we want to reinvent the wheel and come up with something complicated as this. Let me go flip through here. The special tax districts, we talked about it once before, for trash collection. It was a service. We were trying to find a way to collect trash out in these rural areas. And again, we found that was something we didn't choose to do because of them, the size of this county and the cumbersome nature of trying to, you know, put people in these districts, and the people didn't want to do it. Actually, we got a lot of complaints from people. They didn't want to be, you know, pigeonholed in some. We had the same problem when the water companies were out grabbing territories for water, and we had that go up to the state. So people have a tendency not to like to be put in these special districts. So anyway, those are just some observations. I think it just seems to go out and hire consultants to do this, it gives the impression that county government's growing. We're out of control. We're adding into more bureaucracy and more bureaucracy. And keeping track of it all just seems, I'd like to keep it as simple as possible. I do understand we need to do something about infrastructure in the county. You know, we need to address it differently than what we're doing now. And I don't know if this is the way right now. I'm not buying into it, but I know we need to do something. But anyway, that's right. Basically
not advocating this or not.
I understand. I understand. I'm just saying, I see two towns doing it. I see Joe Conaway, you know, and I know Joe, and Joe's, you know, Joe, I don't know who Joe works for half the time, whether he's working for himself or who, or the city. So I question sometimes, you know, the town of Bridgeville doing something, if that's something we need to follow here in the county, and some of these other things. But if it was so good, I think we would have seen Kent County and Newcastle County and other municipalities that are facing maybe bigger pressures than we are, you know, running out to this new, you know, pie in the sky type of solution.
I understand, and I don't disagree. Let me try to put this in a slightly different context, and that's that what this is nothing other than a financing tool. Right. The question as to whether you want to have development or not, the question of whether or not you want to provide services or not.
Who's it helped the most? What's your observation? Who's it helped the most? The lawyers, the developers, or the county?
Not the lawyers.
Every time you turn around, we're going to need a lawyer.
Well, that's right. That's true.
Yeah.
But any time you turn around with a developer and the developer wants to develop something and you negotiate an agreement with the developer, you use a lawyer. This is a financing technique to find the lowest cost of funding available for required infrastructure.
But who's this help?
It helps the developers, and it also helps the home buyer.
Now, they're getting a lot of this stuff today. I mean, we have a subdivision, gets approved, it goes out there, the developer puts the infrastructure in, passes the cost
along to the home buyer.
It's either passed on this way or through the price of the land.
Exactly.
I think it's easier and simpler than we have to hire any consultants if they pay for it up front. And that keeps the cost of the developer keeping the houses down, because he's got to deal with the marketplace. He can't keep pushing the envelope because he's got all these other costs involved.
Right.
He's got to appeal to that niche. This just bails him out, and I think it makes their profit margins greater, and it just seems to me like it's something being promoted for the developers, and it benefits them more than anybody.
Prove me wrong. I don't know.
I've heard
it benefits the developers clearly. But it also benefits. It also benefits.
I would say. Well, let me just say this:
the district.
You would have to have almost every subdivision now being approved become one of these, and they would almost have to be
you know, closely connected to see any benefits, because you might get one special tax district here, and you might get another one way over here a couple of years down the road. You might get another one over that side of the county. And you know what? They're not going to be in a town. See, they can be all pushed together, and you can see benefits. But when you're spreading all these little things out all over the place, I don't see any help.
Well, the people who come to you and ask you for it are the people who are developing the property. Ultimately, they've got to put in a certain amount of infrastructure, and they either finance it through this or through another method. This method gives them a more cost-effective way to do it. So, ostensibly, and I can't speak for the developing crew, I don't represent the developers, that would enable them to basically find a cheaper source of funding to provide the same product and to sell the same product at a lesser cost. In connection with what's going on right now with DelDOT is essentially requiring a lot of the developers and a lot of the development in the state to upfront the cost of infrastructure for transportation. And that may put an absolute plug on development. That's a policy.
That's like Chicken Little.
I understand.
So far we've heard all these, and you know what, developers,
I understand.
The smart guy, figures out the system.
I understand.
He can move on.
I understand. And I'm not advocating that. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to respond, and I hear your points. And the contraposition of this is only a financing tool that you, the county, would be empowered to do in the event you decided to do it.
Any benefits for Sussex County?
Who determines the nexus? There's a nexus that's got to be developed between the good for the community versus the rest of the public, and how far that infrastructure goes?
It's kind of a two-fold question. Whether that's determined by the county, in this case, by the county's agreement to finance infrastructure improvements, you know, outside of the districts as part of the deal. You're free to set the parameters of that. The nexus that I'm referring to here is really a constitutional taxing authority nexus, which ultimately comes down to the shoulders of the bond council, the person who is delivering an opinion to the bondholders to the effect that this all works and this tax works. They have to make a determination based on the best facts what percentage of a particular project outside of the district could be financed. A perfect example would be if you do this and you had to add an additional cell to a wastewater treatment facility. Because of this development, the wastewater treatment facility is outside of the district, but for this development, that cell wouldn't have to be built. That's pretty easy. 100% probably could be financed because all of this flow is attributable to that growth. It's a lot harder when you have an intersection where you have traffic impact analysis, and it could be this and several other projects that are adding to it. And there's not an exact science to it.
And who ultimately determines that?
Well, it's a joint determination, partly by the county as to how much the county would be willing to allow these bonds to be used for that purpose. And ultimately, it comes down to the group of lawyers who are having to give an opinion to the bondholders.
Or one lawyer?
No, it's a law firm. The bond council. And they would have to be comfortable that the nexus is sufficient to support that allocation.
It would seem to me that if you're making this more efficient as far as the financing of infrastructure improvements, and maybe in the first couple of deals, the developer is glad to fund, you know, X, Y, and Z infrastructure improvements because of this financing has made it so much more affordable. It would seem like very quickly DelDOT or the county or whoever would pick up on the fact that they do have a greater ability to fund infrastructure, and at that point a larger amount of the infrastructure responsibility could be shifted to the developer and the special tax district. Is that something that you would think would happen?
I guess it could happen, but the infrastructure has to be paid for, and if it's the developer who's paying for it out of their pocket, they're going to pass those costs along through the sale of the house or the lot. Well, if it's here, presumably they can reduce the sale, keep some of it, or reduce it all, and then basically pass the cost here. Ultimately, it's the homeowner, the person who buys the developed house, who's got to pay for the infrastructure. The developers won't do this unless there's a profit in it. Obviously, you know, there's gradations there. But I don't know that it's going to become a mechanism to shift responsibility as much as it's a mechanism to find a cheaper alternative way to provide the same financing that otherwise is built into the development.
Okay.
And the following point would be is there's a market-driven aspect to it. It isn't going to work if the taxes or the proposed taxes don't work in the taxing structure. I gave you a chart just to show you how they've been able to market. You know, if they're talking about substantially more infrastructure and substantially higher costs, then the numbers just don't work. You can't sell the bonds because people aren't willing to bank on a deal where the taxes get so high.
The lots don't sell.
If the lots don't sell, the underlying owner has to pay this. And so the underlying owner of the land.
Okay.
And so there's a special tax assessment. In the inception, typically it's owned by the developer. So if the lots don't sell, the developer has to pay these tax assessments. If they don't pay these tax assessments, then the county has to go through the process and foreclose and sell those properties. The costs of all of that are paid by the special development district. It's all set up by and with the assistance of the administrator, not a cost to the county. So then the property is sold because the property is really supporting the special tax, and then somebody else buys the property with the benefit of all the improvements that the special tax has financed, the roads, the streets, the sewer, whatever it is.
If they got the far along, yes.
Well, that's right. But remember, these special proceeds, when the bonds are issued, the proceeds from these things are put into a trustee account, and they can be only used for these purposes. It isn't as if these bonds are issued and the county gets the money and can deposit the money and use it for whatever it wants. Well, the developer doesn't get the money. There's an agreed-upon set of improvements and a requisition process and a commercial trustee that holds the money and can only use it for those purposes. So if they don't pay and the development doesn't go forward and the monies are never used, well, then the monies that are sitting in this trustee accounts are used to pay the bondholders back.
And that's
how it's structured.
Does the county make any money on this deal?
The county can make money on this deal. And both the town and the Bridgeville deal, both in those circumstances, those towns negotiated certain things from the developers that they otherwise would have had to pay for themselves. Kind of Bridgeville got a library out of it. And then they determined that there were some upgrades that they internally wanted to do to deal with the growth they had approved. So they got some new computer systems and some other things. They obviously were also getting increased tax revenue from the people in those cases who are annexed in.
Did you get an administration fee out of...
You can charge an administration fee. From a program perspective, and David Baker, on behalf of the administration, if you were to go forward, would be putting together a program, which would, among other things, have an application process, who would work to set parameters for this, would have an application fee or a program fee that would cover any incidental costs up front or whatever, and you all would be free to decide what you want to ask for from the developer in return for agreeing to give them this financing tool.
Okay.
Anything else? Mr. Rogers?
I have a lot of the same concerns that my colleagues got here, and I want to hear the rest of the presenters, but my last concern is, and our previous administrator, I won't mention his name, always said pay as you go, and I know the buzzword in Durham the last few years has been impact fees, you know, and I don't like that across the board because the people born and raised here can't afford to build here anyway any longer, and we have enjoyed some of the lowest taxes in the nation, and I don't want to see that go away. But if it's just for the ones moving here in certain districts, like Mr. Dukes said a couple weeks ago, one developer's had to pay like $10 million for five intersections. Well, they're getting you either way. So I got to learn a lot more about this to see if I would be willing. I like to raise taxes. But the bottom line is the consumer is always the one that suffers. I mean, the person's going to buy the house, up it goes. And I think there'd have to be a... you know, some kind of disclaimer saying this is a special tax district subdivision.
It has that, and I'm not advocating this, but I mean, put this in context of you have a developer who's going to develop a particular development, and that developer has to do certain road improvements, sewer, water, electric, and streets. They've got to pay for all that regardless of whether there is this or not. If that developer goes out and pays for all that himself through private conventional financing, maybe some of that stuff doesn't get put in up front. Maybe the costs of that are more. The developer's out of pocket more, passes that along. This simply puts in mechanism a way to say that ultimately that gets passed through theoretically to the underlying purchasers of that property. This simply says that we reduce those costs up front from the developer, so the lots can go lower. But in addition, this particular homeowner has agreed for the next 15 or 20 years to pay a certain amount each year, incrementally above its taxes, to help pay for that infrastructure. That infrastructure is a result of the development that was put in there. That homeowner always has the right to pay that off at any given time without penalty, the way these deals are structured. So in essence, ultimately, it's the homeowner who's paying for it, or the taxpayer that's paying for it. It's just, does it come up front through higher increased cost, or ultimately, does it come through this tax increment. And it's, I can't profess it's perfect because I don't know, you know, how much the developer keeps or benefits or doesn't keep in benefit. But there are parameters that you can create around this thing to get this stature, to get this power. Wouldn't, again, say that you have to do this. It would just give you a tool that if you decided to use it, you could use it. You wouldn't be honest
if you do it. How do you say this guy needs it and the other guy don't? That's a big issue. But I looked on the internet about this, and it says, you know, like Mr. Cole said, a lot of these municipalities jump on board and do it. And the face of our town municipal councils is changing from people that are moving here, taking the council over. And, you know, I don't want even people in municipalities have to, like Mr. Stickles, have to move back to New Jersey to get cheaper taxes. And in some of these towns now, it's the infrastructure costs are being passed off very quickly across the board. And some of the people have been there 60, 70, 80 years have no clue until it comes in the mail. Nobody will pay for it.
Well, that's true. But the existing people in the town of Bridgeville and the existing people in the town of Millsboro aren't paying for this. And that's why they do this, so that the people coming in who are buying a certain kind of house with a certain disclosure.
Within a section of town.
Within a section of town or an area that's been designated. They've agreed to it up front. The fallacy is that the property owners have to petition to get this. But that's usually the developer up front. So basically, when you're buying a house, you're making a decision up front. Do you want to buy into a district that has all this stuff, with all this in place, at this price, but I understand I have to pay a higher tax? The market's going to determine whether or not that's sellable or not. And if it doesn't work, developers won't use this because it won't be effective.
Yeah. That's all, Mr. Duke.
Mr. Jones?
What happens if, for instance, 100 people move in, 50 throw in the towel? What happens to the bonds and...
100 people move in and 50 don't pay the tax?
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's something like that. A percentage doesn't do it. And is there a backup? I mean, I know the county's not responsible. What happens if...
The county's responsibilities are to issue the bonds once it has agreed to do so through an ordinance.
And for them
to assess and collect the special tax. The special tax is incrementally above the normal tax. The way it works is it would be a separate line item on your current county billing. It would be collected and come in. If somebody doesn't pay those taxes, then the county would have a responsibility through its administrator, wouldn't be the county, to send the homeowner a couple notices saying you're late. If they don't pay their taxes, then the county would have agreed with the bondholders. That the county's attorneys, through the administrator, will have to take action to collect those taxes. Because the only way that these bondholders get paid are if those taxes are collected. So in this particular case, if 50 people didn't pay their taxes, then the sheriff would have to come in, or the county would have to come in and take action.
Yeah, the sheriff, so then hopefully.
That's right.
And then by that process, we, you know, the lawyers and everything would... The county would get paid for their participation in that particular part.
Yes. But the negative impact of that is there's people who are buying these homes would be dispossessed of their houses.
Right.
And that would be a change for you all. Right. But, you know, the contra argument on that I've heard, and again, I'm not advocating either way here, is that when they bought the house, they realized this is what they're getting. And they bought into that.
Right.
And, you know, why shouldn't they have to pay for that?
Right.
More importantly, why should somebody else in the county have to carry them and allow them not to pay?
And you do have situations where people come in and they get mad at the developer.
No, I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand. Julie, I understand. Yeah.
Is there any counties around that have done this special thing?
Not in Delaware, but
I understand.
In the country, clearly, yes. There's all kinds of districts out there, too. Les Guthrie may be able to touch on that a little bit later. There's not just special development districts. There's all kinds of infrastructure improvement districts at the county level. Florida, I gave to David an article, a very interesting article. Florida, I should have pulled it out for you, but there's the predominant amount of the infrastructure for this kind of development in Florida is done through these types of development districts because the powers that be are finding it much more palatable to try to get these things financed by the growth related as opposed to on a general basis. Also through impact fees. I mean, it's all part of the same equation.
That's right.
Absolutely.
You get the same result.
Wait, Mr. Jones.
What?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm fine. How long, like, just $1,000 or like that?
Yes.
How long, I mean, is that all negotiated prior to?
Yes, it is. You know, typically, a bond deal might last 15 or 20 years. 20, 25 years. 25 to 30 years, depending on the market. So there could be $1,000 payable that incrementally increases each year by 2% to pick up inflation costs for a 25-year period. And it might be $1,500, it might be $1,700. It all depends on how much infrastructure is financed, how many units are there, and what the allocable share of that type of unit is. But that's
all laid out for them probably.
That's set up front. There's a very complicated tax formula that the administrator helps you do, but that's set up out front. And the important thing is the homeowner can decide it moves in, it can pay, prepay them all if it wants.
In other words, who wants to write a check for $50,000?
Or 20 or 30, whatever the figure is, and then be done with it without penalty. That's typically how these are set up. In the Bridgeville deal, they actually did a piece so that they could actually allow that to help and offer that as part of the upfront sales to give some discounts. So, but yeah, it would go for the life of the bonds, and that would be as long as necessary to finance those improvements.
Okay. I guess all I got right now.
Mr. Meeks, could I ask a couple of questions?
Yes, sure.
Would there be any reason why the county should consider requesting the enabling legislation unless it intended to go forward and then adopt its own program and its own enabling ordinance and allow it to be used?
It's a good question. I think politically, depending on the climate and the timing, if it has the power and elects not to use it, it can always decide on its own as a council sitting here whether it wants to do it or not. If it doesn't get the enabling legislation and it at some point is presented with a situation where everybody thinks they want to use it, there then is the political and timing process of going and getting it. It is an enabling statute. And there are other issues at the state level, as we all know right now, surrounding this TDR and other things. So from my perspective, as the county's bond council, I feel the county ought to try to get this power simply because it gives it another tool. I'm not telling you whether you should use it or not. That's your determination. That's a political question. But to give you this power just gives you another thing in your arsenal that you can help, if you determine that's what you want to do, help people in your jurisdictions develop, buy, and finance infrastructure.
When you talked about the two-thirds vote of the property owners,
yes,
does that have any real meaning if you had a single developer who had 500 and somebody one?
No, it doesn't. What it means is that the request comes from the property owners in the district. In my experience, it's always the developer or two developers that own all the land. It's the developers who are going to develop the land. And remember, it doesn't work quite as well with an existing property because existing properties out there with multiple owners generally are already developed. There's not a new growth of infrastructure that they're creating that they need. So it's really, you know, it's the classical situation of redevelopment with old blighted property where they need a lot of new capital to bring it up to date, or undeveloped land where in our particular state Delgado's really coming to bear.
The county did this and set up its own program and had an administration fee that required the developer or the applicant to pay a certain percentage to the county, plus allowed the county to recover its bond council fees, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Can all those costs that are paid by the developer then be rolled into the financing?
Some of those costs can be rolled into the financing, and some of them are just paid by the developer out of the developer's pocket, which obviously then
comes. Are there any costs that can't be financed with a bond?
In the tax-exempt bond realm, there are limits on the amount of proceeds that can be used for financing certain types of things. But generally speaking, there would not be out-of-pocket expenses to the county. The county would not be coming out of pocket in connection with one of these programs. All of the council involved and the experts involved are loaded into the program and paid for either by the developer or the bonds.
Thank you.
I'm correct in assuming that these are no debt to the county. These bonds are no debt to the county.
That's correct. They're special obligation bonds, and by the existing legislation and the legislation you would adopt, they don't count against your debt limit. They're not treated as your debt. If there's a default, you have no obligation to raise taxes. You don't guarantee them. Your only obligation is to assess and collect the special tax.
And they are tax exempt.
They are they're tax exempt, but under a different set of rules under the Internal Revenue Code. So separate and aside from this stuff, the Internal Revenue Code determines, as with your own bonds, whether they're tax exempt. And so, generally speaking, they have to be used for governmental purposes. The things that are financed have to be owned by a governmental entity. You can't a developer couldn't finance his golf course and own it and operate it with these bonds. This is really infrastructure that has to be turned over to a governmental entity, be it a sewer district, be it you, be it build out in the state on roads. The traditional classic examples we have in the state right now are two municipalities, and in each of those cases, those municipalities, you know, own their roads, provide the sewer and the water. So essentially, what you would have had is a developer coming to them saying, we want to develop, and they enter into a development agreement, and the developer would have agreed to basically finance the sewer, the water, and everything else, turn it over and dedicate it to the town, like they traditionally do everywhere. And that's the same deal here, we're just financing it through a different way, if you were to do this.
Went to the Plantation Lakes and bought a property. How would I be notified?
There is recorded in the record, the chain of title, a deed restriction, a notice that says that this is part of this special development district, and that buying this property is subject to this special tax. So in the chain of title that you would have somebody search in order to assure you have good title of the property, it would pop up, and it would be right there.
So you'd have to sign off on it?
Yes.
That you were told that?
Yeah, well, sign off on it, or, yeah, it's like any other deed restriction. It's there of record, you're on notice of that.
If the consumer finds it, because many times we've seen in a lot of the mobile home parks where people buy into stuff and they didn't know what they were signing. Wow. So you'd actually have to do due diligence to read all this stuff, and a lot of people at a settlement table, papers are just a flying and everybody's signing.
Okay, and how can, you said that it could not be used for infrastructure that was outside of what was considered benefiting to that district. How can we get DelDOT to not require something that's not a benefit to that district?
We can't.
I don't know if you can answer that.
No, I can't answer that. Basically, we all know what DelDOT's doing right now.
Exactly.
And we all know that as a result of various development and normal growth outside of the developers, that there are infrastructure needs and improvements that are necessary. DelDOT's trying to find ways to finance in that and is trying to shift a lot of that burden on to you all as well as to private developers. There's no way that's a political issue concerning what DelDOT will fund, what they'll require other people to do. And, you know, it's very difficult. It's also a very difficult thing to do if you've got an area of rampant development where you've got a lot of stuff going in and one huge intersection trying to determine exactly how much a district would impact that. There's traffic impact studies. You'd look at, you know, relative flows and come up with some reasonable allocation to do that. But there's no way, Dale, that you can, you know, stop DelDOT from...
And the last one is more common than anything else. The question was asked, why is this in a benefit, or who does it benefit? Well, we all know that, as you said, DelDOT's passing these things on, and for instance, being specific, is the new intersection down there at 54 and 20 there at Americana Bayside.
Yep.
I was with a DelDOT official the other day and asked him how much DelDOT put in that intersection. He said, nothing.
Right.
I mean, that's a benefit to everybody in Sussex County who goes on 54 from McAllen. The developer did a beautiful job at that intersection and made it more safe, much safer to pass through. And, you know, I pass through there real often, and it's so the benefit is we're getting roads repaired because DelDOT's not getting it done. They don't have
the DelDOT was done under our current scenario. We didn't have a tax district, so we're getting those kind of improvements today with the current negotiating that goes on.
Well, we could probably get more done, Mr. Cole, if they had the financing to do it.
Well, here's the question. I mean, this is primarily used for on-site improvements.
And off-site improvements.
Okay, could it just be tailored for off-site improvement? Because the developer's got the cost. When they go in and buy a piece of ground and develop, they figure out what they're going to have to pay for the streets and the sidewalks. Can you just say, because it sounded to me earlier that you could almost tailor this for any
yes.
kind of service you want.
Yes, you could.
Could you do it just for off-site improvements?
Yes, you could.
That's our problem. We don't have problems within the subdivisions. We have problems with how the subdivisions are affecting, you know, and again, the cumulative effect of all this development on big intersections like Dale just referenced. Can we do that?
Yeah.
Is that legal?
Yeah.
I don't know, but...
Well, it is. I mean, but it has to have that nexus we talked about.
So. Well, I don't know. Like you said, we have to figure out how far the impacts are and everything else, and somebody's going to determine it. And Mr. Dukes, is it possible we get Mr. Godwin maybe to a project, take a current subdivision in this county, and assume that it was one of these special tax districts and come up with a scenario to actually show us what kind of money. We're throwing numbers all around. We don't know what we're talking about.
And I'd like to see the real money that would come out of, say, like a salt pond or a plantations or this Isaacs or whatever.
Well, they showed you
one. I want to see one that we've already approved here. It's got one that we've done here, or was it got one?
Yeah, this is from the existing
deal. Plantation Lakes. And wouldn't you have to go to Bedrock and see what the requirements are going to be?
You don't know what that is.
We have a list of infrastructure in here that Bridgeville used.
That
shows different sewer improvements and road improvements and whatnot.
Yeah, but a lot of that was on site. I want to see the benefits off site. We're talking about, all we really have a problem with is the off site improvements. And we're talking here like this is going to be the golden bullet to fix all our problems off site. I don't believe it. You'd have to have
The build-out required from to go 18 miles out.
You don't get enough money out of one subdivision to do it. You have to have every
improvements to say 5 miles or
out. You almost have to have every new subdivision be created as a new special tax district to accumulate. Because what will happen, I think, is you'll see the developers will see all the red tape involved with going this route. And they're going to say, no, we'll just do it the old-fashioned way. We'll do it like we've been doing it.
And you're not going to see roads being improved. We're not getting anywhere with
it. That's what I'm saying, Dan. We've got to either do all of them. Everything with every new subdivision would have to be a special tax district.
Well, every developer has a choice there. They're going to look at the economics. And if it's a small subdivision and Belmont's requiring me to put up X dollars, the developer is going to have to make a choice. Does it make sense to get, is this a cheaper source of financing? Can I do this all or not? And if it turns out that there are a lot of developments, there is a scale that this doesn't work under. And so there may be some, but I would expect DelDOT would allocate all of those costs among various developments.
With the little guy and the big guy, we're all causing the problems. It's just not...
Thank you, Mr. Sammons. I see another, you're biting your tongue, raise your hand, and make comments. If you'll write them down, I'll be glad to listen to them at the end of the third presenter. So, Mr. Baker, number two.
Mr. Wes Guthorn. And Mr. Guthorn is Managing Director for Public Advisory Consultants, and he is a professional financial advisor, and many years ago, about 20, worked on a bond issue that the county did for sewer projects. But Mr. Guthorn agreed to come and help present some information, especially about impact fees for us.
Good afternoon. My name is Les Guthorn. I am Managing Director of Public Advisory Consultants. Our firm serves as financial advisor to approximately 13 jurisdictions in the state of Delaware, including one state authority, Delaware Solid Waste Authority, and two Delaware Municipal Electric Corporation. We were a financial advisor, or are a financial advisor, to the town of Millsboro, also the town of Warren, which is also considering special development districts. We are a financial advisor to approximately 8 counties in Maryland, 4 of which have either instituted special development districts of one kind or another, or contemplating instituting special development districts in their jurisdiction. Off the top of my head, they are Prince George's County, which is about 1 million strong, Washington County, which is about 130,000 people, Harford County, which is about 240,000 people, and Queen Anne's County as well, and Talbot. Just trying to respond a little bit to, we represent governments. We do not represent developers. Our efforts, which have also been on part benefit of the City of Baltimore, is to create sort of, if you will, rules and regulations if you want to do a special development district to put up front so that developers who come to you can meet certain requirements. Those requirements are always set by the governmental agency. They are not set by myself. They're not set by lawyers, but they are set by what is it you require. They're also, from the counties that we represent, they're very much focused upon what's in the best interest of the county itself. In other words, in one jurisdiction, one county, when I say a jurisdiction, I'm in this instance saying a county, they want development to occur only in certain areas. So to enhance that development in certain areas, they will allow special development district to be created. They do not necessarily allow it in other parts of their jurisdiction. The reason for it is for the ancillary benefits that are derived to the county. For instance, in one of our counties, they don't want to spend too much money on their own, quote, infrastructure. They don't want to raise taxes. They don't want to raise fees and charges. They don't want the residents who live there now to pay for certain additional improvements to, whether it be one form of infrastructure or another. And if these districts can generate additional funds to pay for these ancillary services, they will consider the development of these districts as described to you by Mr. Sammons. If they don't, they're really not interested. Each governmental is different. Going to the point I'm supposed to talk about, which is impact fees, some governmentals use impact fees for growth. That's the only thing they're allowed to, for growth-related projects. Impact fees are usually drawn or paid for at the same time a building permit is pulled. They are difficult to prognosticate, to predict, to put on a financial forecast plan, to figure out when and how much amount they're going to come to the governmental entity.
Like transfer taxes.
Yes, sir. Right. Same. Matter of fact, if you will, we were just in a meeting yesterday. We talked about recordation transfer and impact fees all in the same breath. Mm-hmm. But so they are booked and they are held effectively for growth projects as they come due. They have not been applied, in the case of Millsboro, if you will, in a special development, to the payment of debt. Debt, as the special development district is created, the reason local jurisdictions and these larger counties like them, and I use that term advisedly, because as I said earlier, it's a selective feature, is that they don't have to incur their own debt, general obligation debt, themselves, or water and sewer, if they have a water and sewer system that is separately supported themselves. It is something to offload to another debt instrument. So it is not carried, if you will, through the general property tax. It is not carried through the general water and sewer fees. That is the general reason, and that is how they use impact fees as well. Most of my impact fees that for the counties we look at go, well, they all go for growth projects, oftentimes education, oftentimes some road growth that goes on when the state is not doing that kind of work. But it is all growth related. Actually, my presentation is relatively brief based on that. That's what we use impact fees for, and that's how we book it. And because it's difficult to prognosticate, we don't pledge it to debt, general obligation debt issued by a county or a jurisdiction, because we don't know what the flow is. Mr. Sammons talked about the unique structure of a special development debt issuance. It is unique. It is not like a county general obligation, which is 20 years. It usually has level debt service. You pay principal and interest. You know exactly what the payment is going to be from the beginning. Debt that is issued related to special development districts look more like a revenue bond. In that regard, they borrow for a debt service reserve fund. That's a requirement of any revenue bond issued. It has a higher interest rate. There's no question about it. The debt, as it's amortized, is very little in the first 5, 6, 7, 8 years. The bulk of the debt comes due in the 30th year. Sometimes the 25th year, there's a term bond. So it is structured entirely different than your own. The reason for it is to build up the accumulation of funds over time and to believe in how the absorption of those residences, of those new residents into the community will occur. So we're in a position right now where the economy is slowing, even in Sussex County a little bit. Housing is certainly falling off in other parts of the country. These are all issues, these are all concerns. If you were issuing general obligation debt based on growth, you may feel the pinch a little bit, because it isn't the norm that you issue deferred debt. Special development districts are built for the risk that's built into it. The gentleman here who represents underwriters, who is an underwriter, they look at the structure of the debt to try to ensure that their bondholders, who they sell to, are secure. Security in this case is built up over time.
and not having principal due or come to be paid too rapidly. I think if I stop now, I'm probably on the head, and you can ask me whatever questions, and I'll try to answer them.
Mr. Cole?
Well, all the vehicles we've heard about these last two, Mr. Sammons and yourself, they're all market-driven, basically.
Yes, sir.
Right, it's all market-driven. So it's
If somebody's starting a new subdivision, trying to create a new tax district, if the market's slow,
they probably won't ask to.
They probably won't even ask for it.
That's correct, sir.
Right. So again, there's no guarantee on any of these are going to be better than the others, right? Because I see impact fees as being more commonplace. Once you figure out, let's say this, once you figure out your menu of what you want your impact fees for, isn't it easier to administer an impact fee program than what I heard from Mr. Sammons with all the lawyers and the consultants and the special administrators?
You know, I'm going to give you two different answers, not try to make
no,
it happen,
no,
but just, no. Impact fee business is same thing, Mr. Baker and Mr.
Because Robert, we do this,
that,
we already do it here,
that you already collect impact fees, you apply it as you're going to apply it. They would be better. They were certainly more knowledgeable about the rate and the amount that they come in from year to year, from month to month, however they are paid. Special Development District is really, they're looking for a constant, interestingly enough, a constant they model, if you will. The debt service that is structured is very, the term structured is really a very fine point here. If they expect in the first, let's say 15 years, that $1 million in principal comes due, they've already figured, there's a consultant who does it, admittedly, who evaluates what's the likelihood of, I'm going to use the term absorption, of housing or to the development to occur. That includes good times and bad times. So they have to predict the sufficiency of revenue coming in to pay that $1 million. When the county, or most jurisdictions, issue GOs, you base it on, debt is really an extraordinarily small part of what you spend money on. You know, infinitesimal, and not infinitesimal to, I'm sure, yourselves or taxpayers, but it's not a significant amount. And you have a large portion of your budget that you put to PAYGO, because as money comes in, you're willing to spend it right then and there for certain projects that are achievable, and you banked your money, if you will. On special developments, you need the infrastructure to occur ongoing and get it done, so the development will occur. So it's a little bit different approach. But yes, you are correct. Other people are involved. They are paid for out of that special tax that is pledged. It is not taken out of, quote, county funds. As a matter of fact, if you wanted to, I guess you could essentially say you could collect impact fees as you normally would.
Do you need as much bureaucracy to run a impact fee program? Because right now we do it in our engineering department with collecting zero versus the other.
There wouldn't necessarily be another bureaucracy at all, but you are correct in your statement that would there be somebody else responsible for creating what the tax would be on any home, that's correct, or any empty parcel, that's correct. That would all be done by a separate, quote, administrator, as Mr. Sammons said. It would be paid for out of the funds of that special district and not out of county coffers. So it would be a separate function, if you will.
It would be less money that would go to the actual infrastructure improvement because we've got to spend X amount of dollars for administration.
Well, I'll give you a for instance. Because it's in the schedule of fees that we looked for an administrator on one of the communities that we worked on over in the projects, the administrator cost was $15,000 to $26,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a question of
26.
Pay me here or pay me there. It's something goes for some piece.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else right now.
Mr. Phillips?
It seems like this discussion, although educational, is kind of a exercise that really doesn't matter unless we go ahead and get the authority to do this. I mean, why would anyone not want to get the enabling legislation passed so that we could have that flexibility in the future?
You know, if I give you an answer, if it's my answer, not a general governmental, so you'll please understand
the opportunity.
So, but I mean, in the community that I live, in the county that I live, they haven't gone for that special district development, but in the three counties that surround me, they have. They've implemented it selectively at best. It's not a panacea. It's not the beginning and end. It's not for 100 houses. It's usually for 300, 400, 500. It can be for a commercial. We have a commercial strip mall in one of my counties. They went for it because that commercial strip mall, which is rather sizable, frankly, it's more like Queenstown or part of the Rehoboth development. They went to build it because they wanted that infrastructure put there, and there was no other way to get it. It was not on the list for the, you know, the county to forward funds. The nexus wasn't there, as you were talking about earlier, to run lines to it. And they built it, and they paid for it because they requested it. The county decided to put that legislation in so that it gave the opportunity for them to review on a case-by-case basis whether or not it was in the best interests of the county at large to have a special development district.
The long way of saying there is really no reason not to have the
Correct. Because you still say yay or nay every time something comes to look at you.
And even if we decided to do it, we could do it in a very, almost like a pilot project approach to see if it is something that we would want to do at a broader scale.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Cool.
But unless you brought to Rogers.
Mr. Phelps, I have a question in. I think it's good to have it as an option.
Right. Good. The clients who have engaged us, it's one of many tools. It's, you know, if we're sitting in a meeting and said, how do I avoid paying for this? How do I incur this? Or
now, we're talking tools. Let me just ask, sir, are we talking now, are special development districts, which is your line item, or is it impact fees, or are they both the same?
They are not the same. Yeah. Impact fee is just one charge. Right. A special development fee is usually a special tax that is levied above a county tax.
Okay. Now, do we need enabling legislation, Dave, to do... What do we need enabling legislation to do? Do we need it for impact fees? Because we already do impact fees.
Well, we have impact fees. I think we probably would, depending on what... we have impact fees for sewer.
Right.
I think we would probably need it also, Mr. Griffin's not here, but I think we probably would need it if you wanted to branch out into...
Not just doing an ordinance here at the county level, because we have the ability to do impact fees already. But you're saying we have to... Dover would have to permit
for
us.
Sewer, but I don't think we have it for... a lot of other services, and of course special development districts we would need.
So if you're looking at getting the ability to do things, why don't we just get the ability to do everything? And then, or not just one.
Like these special development districts?
The other side, Mr. Samuels was just reminding me, lest I forget. As I said, the impact fees are sporadic, and they are not as predictable, if you will, in the collection when the building permits are drawn. So if you build a sewer that is going to be supported by impact fees, you are going to front the money, so to speak, by borrowing it, and your debt's going to incur immediately. So that's a slight difference. I mean, counties take a generous step forward when they issue debt, because they're assuming revenues are going to come in as predicted or at a certain level. So you're making a real commitment from the general taxpayer or water and sewer payer, whomever, to those revenues will come.
So that sounds like impact fees are much riskier.
Impact fees are not predictable. You know, if you look at your tax rate and your taxpayer, you create your budget based on a certain assumptions, which is really no different than impact fees. The impact fees can drop off, as Councilman Cole was talking, recordation and transfer. Economy turns on you, there will be a drop in collection of impact fees, just as there will be a change in recordation and transfer. Property tax tends to be, all you have to do is essentially estimate a little bit lower. The properties you have are going to be taxed. They're going to be taxed at the rate you're going to you've been taxing them, unless you're under major duress, which Sussex County doesn't have a history of in any way. You're not raising taxes because there's going to be a quote shortfall.
I guess my only question, and I'll make it quick because time's slipping away. Do you see any reason why the county wouldn't, as Mr. Cole said, ask for the legislation for impact fees and special development districts to do it also?
After you, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
If we're going to get tools, let's get all the tools.
Mr. Baker, number three.
Fill my tool bag.
Number three is Mr. Ted Bishop from DelDOT, and he would like to, he agreed to speak about transportation districts and explain about how that works, and especially a project or some projects that they've done in Newcastle.
And this is something we are doing today, right, sir?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to talk about two things, both of which we are.
Should I put this up here?
Do you have this on the seasons?
One of which is moving forward fairly rapidly.
Okay. He's not only a bond counsel, he's also a good man to have around the office.
A true jack of all trades. I'm going to hand this out too.
Thanks, Ted.
Add a little color to it.
It's a special, I'm going to be a lawyer here.
We at DelDOT do not have any, we'll be clear at this very beginning, there's no magic bullet here as far as what can be done, what should be done to try and finance infrastructure. And in DelDOT's case, obviously, it's transportation infrastructure. So what you've been hearing here today in regards to various tools that can be considered and used, I would say we would certainly second that. We have done a couple of things that certainly fall into that category, which I'm going to briefly describe for you today. I'm going to start with the Westtown Master Plan, and we'll go through this handout fairly quickly, but what occurred about 2003 up in Middletown, DelDOT was asked to come and meet with a number of developers and the mayor of the city of Middletown and to talk about an idea they had for a master plan, have an area annexed, as you can see.
This is Middletown proper as it was, and then the town wanted to annex this area here. As part of that annexation, the idea that they brought to DelDOT was we'd like to consider the development, the annexation, land use, infrastructure at one time and come up with a planned community that enabled essentially all these things to work together. And that's reflected in the second page graphic where you see the master plan and the circle around it showing design, concept plans, construction. And it was, talked a little bit about the nexus earlier. This is the nexus in this case. The nexus was bringing together development, improvements related to infrastructure of all types, and encompassing all of that within a master plan approach to developing the area west of Middletown, which obviously was called Westtown. If you flip to the next page, it's very simply an indication with a red dotted line of the study area or the area that eventually became Westtown. And that's for orientation purposes primarily. The next page gives you a feeling for the scale. What you see again, that area on that display essentially encompasses about 1,500 acres. It's about 1.7 million square feet of commercial and retail space, approaching 3,000 housing units of various types, about 300 acres of industrial and manufacturing land, half a million square feet of office, 600 hotel rooms, 6,500 students in a new number of new schools. Kiev, which was a new high school, which I'll talk about in a moment. And then about 190 acres of parkland. A key part of this also was something that was mentioned earlier today, which was transfer of development rights, which were utilized in this case to protect some agricultural land and move that development that could have occurred on that land to the more central part of the master plan, as shown on the master plan map. I'm going to go through very briefly why the master plan, and then we'll get into a discussion about the actual allocation and the financing part, which I know is your primary interest. The master plan approach, which we were impressed with, really had to do with a number of things. First, the idea of a master plan was targeting development to a growth area adjacent to a town, which is something that's clearly part of the Liberal Delaware program and our state strategies. It provides, and did provide in this case, an excellent partnership opportunity for Delaware to work with the town, town fathers, and Delaware Department, I'm sorry, the other state agencies in addition to the Delaware Department of Transportation, and also six or seven developers who had an interest in working together. Now, this didn't come together over a matter of a few days. This took about a year and a half of negotiations and discussions, but eventually a consensus was reached. What it also does is something we've been talking to some of you about in regards to your comprehensive plan, and that's taking a regional approach to planning for infrastructure and various public facilities. Because what that does is provide a necessary base for getting things done in a less piecemeal way and more of a long-term planned way. It also importantly provides an opportunity to plan, design, engineer, and also build a community where all the various elements and components are there. In terms of another very important reason for Delta participating was related to the time and cost for getting infrastructure completed and the community started. Typically, as you know, when a development proposal comes in, a subdivision, particularly a larger one, DelDOT will require a traffic impact study be done. In this case, because we're talking about so many different possible developments and pieces to the master plan, the idea of consolidating all of those and doing a master transportation study for all of that development was something that we felt was very important and had advantages. It also, as I mentioned a minute ago, allowed us to move forward in constructing the infrastructure along with, as much as possible, the actual development of the various elements of the comp plan.
And we're really just talking about traffic, the road system. That's the only infrastructure.
The master plan concept that I'm talking about included not only transportation highways, but also water, sewer, and drainage.
Okay.
That was all part of the master plan approach. You just jumped ahead of me a little bit. My third item on here gets into that. It's integrating stormwater management and as well as river improvements and the town providing the necessary capacity for water. So when DelDOT looks at all of these things and what it brings to the table, this is the kind of approach that we support strongly, and we're advocates of this kind of this idea of regional planning, very wide studies, districts such as this, which don't necessarily have to be adjacent to a town or a city, but there are advantages to doing that as well. The next page is really just an indication, again, of what we were talking about and what it looked like from an aerial photograph prior to moving forward with the development plans that have become part of the master plan. Following that, just for comparison purposes, you can see the same plan that I have on that panel there, but something you can take with you in terms of what was happening here. I don't know how much time you want to get into the details of this. I can certainly answer questions in regards to the various aspects of this when I complete, or rather when I complete my comments. The next page, I think, is probably the one that you might be most interested in. And I put that introductory paragraph in there in bold because it's very important. Again, I started by saying that there is a magic bullet. In this particular case, the developers decided that in order to meet the projected cost for the road improvements, that they would work together and come up with a unit cost. And that's what you see. It's not to say that this would work everywhere or that it's necessarily a model. But what they did was created a unit cost as you read across the property identification. The names of the developers are not that important as much as the land use is. For commercial or industrial, the multiplier or the unit cost was 75 cents per square foot. For employment centers, they also used a figure of 75 cents per square foot. For straight commercial, just commercial without an industrial element, $1 a square foot. And for apartments, $325 per unit. Residential, and this is mostly single family, $650 per unit. And then finally, for age-restricted types of development, a lower cost because it generates less trips of $325 per unit. Again, I want to point out that this was working toward a total cost of about $15 million that was anticipated in 2004 to be the cost for the necessary road infrastructure to make this work. As time went on and the cost of asphalt, concrete, steel, other materials, and labor increased, roughly 2 years after that, there was a need to go back and work with the developers to actually provide an indication of new cost, and they worked with us to proportionally share that, which again remained at a 30% developer cost share, 70% DLDOT.
Was that part of the agreement that you had the ability to go, you know, if there was a calculation or change in the prices that you could go back, or was that something they just voluntarily did, or is this?
That's just one question. Initially, this agreement that we had a 4% escalator clause in it,
okay,
indicating that we had the ability, you know, to work with them each year to increase the cost to account for changes of 4%. That did not fly. They decided they didn't want to use that at that point, so we'd rather than have this whole process killed, we decided to move forward and take it out. In hindsight now, that obviously should have been kept in, and the developers recognize that.
We don't know about future developers.
Future developers, this has provisions in it that anyone that comes into this area, if the property is exchanged, flipped, whatever it is, if there's a change, that would also be required of the new developer. So that, in fact, these developers are kept whole in regards to what they're providing. It's also important to note that, as I have at the bottom here, that every developer, as part of this process and agreement for the master plan, agreed to provide and dedicate to us the necessary right of way for making improvements. And with the cost of land being what it is, that's no small thing.
Did they get credit for that?
They got credit for that.
If they gave the land, they didn't have to pay dollars and cents.
Yes. But it was credited to the cost, total cost that we arrived at. In both cases, the original numbers as well as the revised numbers that we came up as a result of the increase in total cost to make improvements. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. We're talking about different ideas. Here's one idea that was used pretty successfully. To sort of summarize this, I'm going to point out a few things on my display over there, and then I'm going to very briefly talk about something else that we're using. Under what we know on the last page here, we know and we knew that the West Town development would increase traffic. That's obvious. We knew that improvements could be made to accommodate the increased traffic volume, and those river improvements must be made prior to and concurrent with each phase of development. That's extremely important, that aspect of it. Typically, what we often find is that, and probably experienced it here as well, is that as the capacity is reached on the road, the developer that comes in last, that's closest to that, is stuck with the tab for picking up most of the cost of that improvement. This enabled us to work both sides at the same time and have that development and the phasing of development work with the necessary roadway improvements. So we had the capacity at the time that the development was built out. What we were doing under concurrent activities, we're currently refining the sequence and staging of roadway projects. We're continuing to design and construct roadway projects by priority. As part of that, we're relocating utilities, working closely with utility companies. We're updating our forecast as additional development takes place, so that we're currently and we'll continue to have good numbers to work with. We continue coordination with Southern Newcastle County in respect to other projects in the area, and we're designing and constructing not only the roads but the stormwater management facilities to serve both the development and the road improvements. As you might expect, with the additional roads going in, we need to have the ability to drain the roads, which has really not received the attention it should have over the years. So that's an extremely important aspect of what we're doing. What is happening? The roadway improvements are being built in sequence to accommodate the development. The master plan is in fact being implemented, and we're continuing to update the public about what we're doing and how we're moving forward. This is not as, I really had hoped to have a display that's a little better than this, but I sort of ran out of time. Just wanted to point out a few things here. One of the key things that we always hear about is that if you're going to have commercial development, developers and businesses want to have a traffic signal. So one of the first things that went in terms of new signals was a signal at this location on Route 301, which serves the employment center, which is an auto park, and some other development that's going in. A Lowe's has gone in this area. There's currently, as depicted down here, unfortunately, a Kohl's store, which has located here adjacent to the signal. And as part of the auto park, I just thought this was kind of interesting, a series of pavers and concrete that are arrayed in a circular fashion around what will be a stormwater management pond that will serve as a display area for new vehicles. And I thought that was kind of innovative. That may be going on in different parts of the country. I wasn't aware of that. The other thing that was very important on our plan of future educational site here, again, you can't see this, but there is, in fact, it's probably about 85-90% complete, the high school has been located up there, Middletown High School. Roads are going in. The infrastructure, as I mentioned earlier, prior to development, so we've got an example of a road with sidewalks and trees and street lights that are going in with the lots adjacent to it. And then finally, down here in this corner, I have an indication of, again, I apologize for being so small, one of the traditional neighborhood design communities that has taken place here. And I believe there are probably about 150 units or so in there. That's the Estates of St. Anne's. The golf course is moving forward, and a number of other things are taking place in terms of infrastructure. We're continuing to relocate utilities, we're continuing to work on building the roads, and we're continuing to work closely with the developers to make sure that those things are staged together. And I would say, from my perspective, having been involved in this from about the very beginning, that it's been very successful in terms of the relationship we developed politically as well as with the developers, and we are moving forward in that partnership. That's the West Town story. I wanted to also, should I just continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
In terms of something else I wanted to bring to your attention. We are, and I guess you'd call this a bit of an experiment, but as is often
said Delbot never has enough money to build the projects we need to do. We have an important interchange project in Little Heaven. That project was essentially stalled until we began to have conversations with a number of developers in this area here. In fact, there were about 10, so to call. And what we essentially did, and I'll just summarize this quickly, is work with these developers in terms of getting contributions based upon the trip generation they were making, and use that trip generation to come up with a fair share cost towards improvements to the actual interchange at Little Heaven. We called this the Little Heaven Traffic Improvement District. We have thus far received about $650,000 from two developers. We are continuing to work with other developers, but as you undoubtedly know, because of the economic downturn, some of this development has slowed down or stopped completely. The levy court adoption of adequate public facility ordinance has had an effect in terms of what is moving forward. In combination, right now this is not, it's certainly not dead, but it has slowed down. We're continuing to have the conversations. What it has done, it's very important, the money that we've received thus far has enabled us to bring the interchange back on board in terms of our CTP and continue to do the design work, the planning and design work that had stopped. We are optimistic that as this does move forward again, that interchange will go in sooner than it would have had this this exercise not been done. One of the things that was important, I think very important to the developers, was that we also have a recruitment arrangement with them, which says that other developers come into this area in the future. The developers who have put money towards the project will get some of that money back, recouped or reimbursed back to them as a result of that. And that may be several years out. I have a spreadsheet that's fairly large, a little bit complicated on how it all works, but I thought I would at least mention that today to you so you know that that's another one of the things that Delbot is looking at in terms of these more area-wide or sub-regional approaches. That's pretty quickly, that's...
Okay, Mr. Trumbull, comments, questions?
Mr. Bishop, that Westwood or whatever it is?
Westtown.
Interior streets. You weren't applying any of your new innovative planning to the interior streets. You were just talking about the major roads that connect everything.
Well, the interior streets were typically being constructed with a traditional neighborhood design type of thing.
From the
developer. Now, on the entrance end, though, that was not part of the cost. It was at from the entrances out and then off-site.
Okay.
And various things that were required as a result of their development. With the understanding that DelDOT, because of background traffic and growth, it was unrelated to that, we picked up that difference over a period of years, and we've been able to match that.
Okay, but when you plan these transportation districts, mm-hmm. it's typically, the focus isn't on the interior streets, it's on the entrances and how it all connects.
It's the whole thing. We're looking at the whole picture as far as...
Any legislation needed here in county for you guys to do this and work with the county? And what?
There is, if we want, if the jurisdictions and the state want to make that mandatory, I shouldn't say never, wrong choice of word. We want to make that available as something that we can have the authority to enforce and make work. We'll need that legislation.
You guys,
what I described to you in both cases here is voluntary.
Gotcha, I heard that word, yeah, I heard it earlier.
Okay, so.
Does it, and you showed Westwood there, does it take a large geographical area for this to work?
No, I don't think
that there is. You can do it with a small suburb.
Well, I'm saying large, that's a relative term.
Right.
This was large enough that we were able to accomplish quite a bit. It doesn't have to be as large as this, but the sub-regional idea or the area-wide study, we've got multiple developments, and someone was talking about that earlier, where if you come in with one, you can't quite get what you need
right.
in terms of the necessary financing. We have multiple developers that are interested in working together with us, and the county or the town, whatever it is,
to do something like this.
But right now, it's all a voluntary type.
It is a good partnership opportunity, but currently it is voluntary. We've been persuasive in these two cases.
And you're talking about how successful it was, this partnership.
Yes.
Now, is it too soon to tell? Is it successful in dealing with the traffic? All that traffic's created by Westtown, will this successful partnership between you and the developers and this traffic transportation district, I mean, is it too early to tell if it was a successful model and that the results were positive, that residents would say, hey, this is better? Or are you just kind of holding your own ground, or is it?
Well, there's different ways of answering that question. First, what we're hearing more of on the street is that this was a good idea. We're glad that this was approached holistically, comprehensively in a master plan, rather than piecemeal, where each thing comes in and, you know, sort of goes to go. Construction is currently taking place on Bunker Hill Road and 301, and we're seeing some initial improvements in traffic flow, but I can't stand here, and I won't stand here and say to you that we've got enough on the ground yet that's going to show totally that this is a success story without doubt.
But the relationship, as you're saying, has been successful. You working with the developers,
but the process direction has worked very well. The partnership has worked very well. Initially, what we see on the ground in terms of the staging of the development and the infrastructure has worked very well. It'll be another couple of years before I can stand up here and say to you, this is, you know, has worked perfectly. It has very, very
will also be the cumulative effect of all the rest of the development that's outside this plan that will
process that. That's another story.
You can't control that.
Right. That's true. Middletown is Middletown. We can only do so much. We would work with the town of Middletown, helping them to develop a master transportation plan that obviously took into account as much as we could Westtown and also other development that's occurring along Route 299 in Middletown. So it's not independent. It's part of a larger thing, including obviously 301, the new 301. That is moving forward in terms of.
Well, I think there's a lot of good ideas, and I think this is a good idea coming from Del Doc, because many times everybody loves to criticize you guys.
Nice to hear that.
Thank you. It's good that we're doing, I guess, going on this, but a lot of things pop up where it's always saying the word voluntary. You've got to coerce them in, and I guess you got to throw them carrots, or I don't know what you got to do to make them want to participate with you. And you're saying there's the ability maybe to get some legislation that would give you the ability to require, like you showed in this other smaller plan, when you know there's a bunch of developments going on or planned, that you could not so much force them, but say, look, you have to be part of this.
Yes, because you're right next to another development.
Right.
It's
but right now, you can't.
Common sense.
You
know, it's voluntary. Right. We in no way coerced anyone in this. What it took was education. It took us a while to educate various developers as to what we felt and sell upon to them the idea of participating together to make this happen. Once they saw, from an economic standpoint, and a business standpoint, their advantages to this, and it wasn't just all about trying to pass the buck, which certainly was not the case, they did come forward, and I think the results are going to be positive.
Well, thank you for not in the community.
Mr. Phillips.
Nope, it's good.
Mr. Rogers, Mr. Jones.
That's the West Town. If it builds out before the roads get in, I mean, is that going to happen or not happen?
The way this is set up, we have agreements in place that require those two things to go hand in hand. And those are signed agreements that DelDOT's has executed with the town and with every single developer.
You're one with the land, so if the developers
split. Did I interrupt you?
Mr. Jones.
Like the developers now, I mean, in Sussex County, they come to you, they say, we're going Andrews Way, boom, 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 you're going to have to do X, Y, Z, done. I mean, basically, we're piecemealing down here versus not doing a cumulative situation. Is that the difference? Because they're still paying the same amount of money.
realistically, probably, right? Maybe it might be a little cheaper if you put 10 in a pile versus...
Well, there's the economy of scale. Economies of scale and efficiencies come into place where, yes, rather than having to do several things, or a couple things several times, mobilizing several times, those costs are shared across the board, and so there's some efficiencies of scale there that I think was part of that education discussion we had, that they actually recognized, which is why they agreed in the case of Westtown to come back and give us a couple million dollars more, actually double, because they saw what the advantages were.
And
they
were cheaper?
And it's not so much it's cheaper, it's understanding what the timeline is and to be able to predict what the build-out would be relative to their return on their investments and not have to guess what was going to happen because it was laid out in an agreement and we're all party to that agreement.
You basically get your money up front? Is that, I mean, or are you just going to...
Now, the money comes in when a particular project is bonded. In this particular case, the town of Middletown actually acted as the, I'll use the word banker, in respect to creating a fund dedicated to this, which the money is brought into, and then Doug up brings their share into that. And then we have a periodic meeting to talk about how that money can be distributed for what improvements. And there's improvements there, for example, like the work is done. We've got it now, but we've got it, and I'm going through it all.
I believe. Do we have anyone, we've been through a long dissertation this afternoon, comments from anybody in the audience? How many want to speak? Two? Who else? Three? Okay. Put them up and identify yourself and...
put time limit on, Dale.
We'll give you about two, we'll give you 3 minutes.
There you go.
Okay. Okay, my name is Nate Bettman. I'm the managing director of the Stone Yogurt. And we are a bond underwriting firm that we underwrite. During the past year, we underwrote about $1.5 billion of special taxing district and TIF bonds across the country, and we're the number one firm in the country in this regard. And I, let me see, well, first of all, with regard to Mr. Bishop's comments, I think master planning is wonderful. It's certainly something to be encouraged. Question of, how generally, particularly when there's larger numbers and when DoDOT doesn't have as much money to spend, how the developers can afford to put in their share. And perhaps knowing of his approach with special development districts could work, and you get around the voluntary with the two-thirds vote, or you can call the district so that if you prefer that everyone who wants it is in the district. With regard to impact fees versus special development districts, I think it's a question of certainty and timing. I think the county wants to make certain that any adverse impacts that are going to occur from a development are taken care of up front and for certain. With an impact fee, as Lester was saying, you don't have that kind of certainty, and the county either has to advance the money up front on the hope and sell its own bonds on the hope that eventually there'll be enough in the way of impact fees coming in, or has to hold back on the development and of the infrastructure and wait until there's so much development that the roads are now clogged or the sewers are now clogged and the infrastructure hasn't been developed in a timely manner. Mr. Phillips asked whether more can be passed on to developers through this mechanism, and the answer is clearly yes over time. I mean, certainly the libraries that were developed in, I guess it was Bridgeville, and it certainly could work with roads. Mr. Cole's question about should counties do this versus municipalities, at least the experience in other places like Maryland and throughout the country, probably 3/4 of this financing has been done by counties rather than by municipalities. With regard to off-site versus on-site, I think you have to keep in mind that often it is in order to serve
major regional needs like roads or like a sewage plant, you may be wanting to build the sewage plant on site to serve the general community. And so you clearly have to be able to finance on site as well as off site. With regard to the Nexus question, we did a $90 million financing in New Kent County, Virginia, outside of Richmond this past year. And there we financed a sewage plant and sewage lines running off of that plant. And it was clearly serving beyond just that particular development. It was for the county. And in Virginia, they have, it's not a special tax, it's an assessment. And for an assessment, the Nexus question is even more strict than for a special tax as in Delaware. And their bond counsel clearly signed off that it was okay for us to be financing this sewage treatment plant based upon revenues generated from this development. And I would think that if BELDOT determined that there was an impact that certain roads had to be created in order to do the development, that this development was creating the traffic impact that required these roads. And if the county further agreed that, yes, indeed, there was a nexus there, then I would think bond counsel would have to go along.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, John Stallford from Miles and Stockbridge. I was here the last time around. I just wanted to elaborate on one thing that Mr. Salmon said. With respect to the disclosure of the special taxes, there are a variety of mechanisms to make sure that property owners are knowledgeable about the fact that there is a special tax on property that they may be purchasing. In addition to the recordation of the notice of the special tax that goes in the land records so that any person searching the title records will be aware of that, there are a variety of other methods to make sure that the homeowners know that. One, it's in a specific separate addendum to the contract of sale from the contractor to the home buyer that's in all bold that says this is a special tax district and here's what you can expect and here's how much it's going to be. The title agents and the settlement agents are all educated on the fact that this property is in a special tax district. That is part of the educational program that the developers go through. This is not, we just put it in place and hope for the best. So these programs have been instituted throughout the country, and there are best practices, and in both Millsboro and Bridgeville, we instituted those best practices to make sure that not only the initial homeowners, but subsequent homeowners, so if someone came and bought the home, they were familiar with it, sold the house again in a subsequent sale, that subsequent homeowner would definitely be aware of the fact that that property was in a special tax district. Another example of an on-site improvement that benefited not only the district, but also outside the district, was in Northborough. We did a emergency services facility that was in the district. So there's another specific example. Last point, I have worked on transactions in which existing developments have used this financing technique, and the existing property owners were petitioned, and two-thirds of them voted for using this technique. Those were situations in which the roads and the water and the sewer serving those facilities were not adequate originally, and they voted on themselves additional special taxes to get their properties up to where they wanted to be. So not only can it be used for brand new development, greenfields, but it can be used for existing developments.
You're a law firm also?
I am.
Okay, we just said the name, I wasn't sure.
Okay, thank you very much, John.
Thank you.
It's not like a bunch of Kramers coming up here.
My name is Jack Hayes, and I'm probably the most jaundiced of the speakers today, and that I represent developers. And I would like to bring this down to real terms, and the real terms are Delgat. We've had meetings with them ongoing. There is currently a spreadsheet, 11 by 17 spreadsheet, of showing impacts down Route 26, Route 20, along Route 1, and all around the area around Bethany right now, that I believe if you add up the cost that it's going to take just to finish the transportation work out there, I would say it's $75 million, at least. $75 million worth of impact to do it piece bit by piece bit will never work. You can pay impact fees, you can charge the developer, you have $20 million that you owe us, and you have 1,000 lots. I want to come in and get 100 permits, and I give you $2 million. $2 million won't even buy a pump station. It will not finish a sewer. It will not pave a road. It will not super elevate a curb that has been long for the last 20 years. That has to be done all at once, and you can't do it a little bit at a time. Another point I want to make is about affordability, and I forget whether Mr. Rogers or Mr. Jones have brought up raising taxes and affordability, because I think that's what it really goes back to. Can a person afford a house by now putting a tax on that house? If that $20,000 that I just mentioned ago was reduced off the price of that house, how many more people could afford that house? And you can say yes, but the developer will stick that in his pocket. Well, there's no covenant in the special taxing district that says a buyer has to buy a house. He's going to buy it because he can afford it and he wants it. And if the price is too high, he will simply not buy the house, and the whole concept doesn't work. It is another vehicle for him to finance $20,000 of costs over a period of 25 to 30 years at a very nominal tax-free cost to him. So it's just another method of financing his home. If you come to him and say, give me 20% down, he can't do it. If you can say, give me 10% down, he might be able to do it. And with the combination of the tax at a lesser rate and with financing, the combination, it's going to provide more affordable housing. That is a really important point to this whole structure. It is a method of financing. I urge you to, as Mr. Cole said earlier, get all the tools in your toolbox that you can, and then look at each individual case on a case-by-case basis and determine what's in the best interest of the county.
Let me get, before you leave, can I? I'm just going to, you brought up $75 million for Route 26. I'm very familiar with Route 26. How would you propose, though, creating, do we go down and just kind of take in everything in existing development? Or if we wait for some new, see, everything's been approved now that's out there now, that we're going to talk about these new special tax districts. How are we going to get that money? I mean, how are we going to do it? I mean, there's still not going to be enough money. You said impact fees wouldn't generate enough. I don't know how this is going to do enough, because too much development's already been approved, and is it beyond this financing mechanism?
Well,
we've all been talking about here today.
The spreadsheet that I referred to a moment ago is all of the impacts that DelDOT has determined for new development coming in. That bill is being handled to new development. It's not being handled to the existing developments. The problems are already there. Now DelDOT has said, fix the problems. And you're the last guy, as someone mentioned, you're the last guy on the block. You fix the problem. So we're prepared to do that, and we're trying to investigate ways to do that.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Johnson.
I just wanted to. So basically, I guess if we're looking to a certain degree as the same method as what he described with West Town, to a certain degree, they've kind of cubicalized the area and said this is going to cost X, Y, Z dollars. And this is where $75 million worth of improvements, and they say you have to do that. If you don't do that, what is your recourse? I mean, as a developer, do they not? I mean, you know, I know they negotiate back and forth to try to say yes, no, we'll pay for this. Or if you say $75 million worth of pot, and I should ask the gentleman from DelDOT, what is their share versus your share?
Right now, our share is 100%. I heard earlier that that was a 70-30 partnership. Is that correct, Mr. Bishop? 70-30 partnership. On the impacts that we're looking at now, Delgado has told us you're paying 100% of the money. If that was a 70-30 partnership today on the $75 million, and Delgado would give us $52 million, their share,
we wouldn't be here, would
you? I wouldn't be here.
Now, wait a minute. Now, don't say that. All I've heard today, we're attorneys. Now, this is what worries me about this whole thing. All I've heard from anybody from the public sector coming and saying these are good, other than this gentleman here, all we've heard is attorneys and bond councils talking about how great these systems are, but the impact fees didn't get a whole lot of attention because I guess you don't sell bonds for impact fees, right?
It's risky.
It's risky. It's all risky, buddy. It's all risky. Don't kid yourself. Okay. So that's the only thing that worries me right now. I just have
risky.
Nobody
take
out bonds thing. For sewers?
Okay.
I mean, their bonds are being issued for the sewers, which are paid for by impact fees.
They're back by the county.
That's right.
So, one question, I guess, can I ask Mr. Bishop, why are you doing a 30-70 split in Newcastle County, the project up there, and you're not doing any participation at all in our county?
Yeah.
When you're talking about this magnitude of work.
In Newcastle County, there was a specific agreement that was worked out with the developers and the town and Delta had a similar agreement.
Yeah, you do. Just they got to pay 100% of it.
You don't have an agreement per se for all these developments that are taking place. We're having discussions with several developers in terms of what we think their fair share of the cost ought to be to help us support, for example, the improvements that we have in our CTP for Route 26 and for the detour roads.
Do they have an option?
They have an option. They can choose not to move forward, and they won't get the necessary approvals from DEVA.
That's the answer I thought you were going to give me.
But this is the answer I have to give. If they're going to create additional trips on facilities that are already overburdened, they've got to bring something to the table to help support the improvements that are necessary.
But why do they bring 100% to the table when they're not going to do that in other counties? Pardon?
They're not bringing 100%. We've already got projects in place that we need additional money to fund, such as Route 26.
Okay. Thank you. All right, gentlemen, what's our consensus? Where are we moving? Are we going to ask for legislation? We're going forward with this?
Sure.
Under Rehoboth.
We want it on
Governor Hubbard.
Do we have a consensus, or we need a motion to?
I just adjourn. I don't think we need to make a consensus.
Yeah, we need to come to a consensus. We beat this thing long enough. We need to decide.
Do
what
now?
Wait,
decide what?
Enabling legislation for special development districts.
Oh,
and
or
fees.
Can
we
do it in a workshop?
It's a workshop.
We can't do it.
We just had a workshop. We're not making.
Yeah. All right, put it on the agenda next Tuesday.
Yeah, put them all on it. Do it all.
But on agenda next Tuesday, not for discussion, but to vote only if we're going to ask for enabling legislation.
First of all, wouldn't we have to draw it up there and know what we're voting on? What kind of enabling?
No. No, we're not going to draft the legislation.
So I was like, yeah, typical.
We're going to put it on, Mr. Baker, we're putting it on, not for discussion, voting for that, asking for enabling legislation. I need a motion to adjourn. I have a motion by Mr. Phillips, seconded by Mr. Jones to adjourn. All in favor, signify by saying aye. No, so carried.
You guys got it made.